Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Some wag once remarked that after New York, it's all Connecticut. The intent was humorous, but like many sarcasms, it contained the germ of truth. For the small cities which make up the backbone of the nation are all in the same pattern. That's why it doesn't really make much difference that we have brought you to this town in Connecticut. The basic facts of our story actually occurred in a Connecticut community much like this one. But they could have happened anywhere.
That's a clip from the 1947 film Boomerang. It takes place in, you guessed it, Connecticut. Our next guest is uniquely qualified to talk more about Connecticut in films. Ileana Douglas has starred in many films, including Goodfellas, Cape Fear, Grace of My Heart, and Ghost World. And she's appeared in several TV shows like Entourage and 6 Feet Under. She's also a notable film historian and a Connecticut native. To kill her homesickness during the COVID quarantine in Los Angeles, Ileana decided to visit Connecticut through the Burt Lancaster film The Swimmer, which was based on the John Cheever short story. That was a jumping off point for Ileana, the film historian, to explore other films set, shot, or otherwise tethered to the Constitution State. She ended up discovering nearly 100 Connecticut movies. So she decided to capture as many of them as possible in her book, Connecticut in the Movies, From Dream Houses to Dark Suburbia. It's a richly detailed journey through a New England slice of Hollywood history, covering films like Bringing Up Baby, Christmas in Connecticut, and The Man in the Gray Flannel Suit. It's also very personal for Ileana. One of the most famous Connecticut films is Mr. Blandings Builds His Dream House, starring Cary Grant and Ileana's grandfather, Melvin Douglas. As fate would have it, life follows art. When she was compiling her book, her own Connecticut dream house became available. She joins us now to tell us about her love affair with Connecticut and why it's so magnetic to so many like her.
What I found through the writing of the book is that people choose to live in Connecticut for a reason. It doesn't seem accidental that Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward chose to live in Connecticut. You know, you're near New York, but you're not in the city, but you have a proximity to Boston, and it's just a great place to live. There's a great sense of freedom. But then the final funny part of the story was that my realtor friend sent me a listing for a house that I knew very well, that I had, you know, played in when I was a child. And I said, it's kind of intriguing idea. You know, I said, I did say I wanted to fix up an old farmhouse. And next thing I knew, I was Mrs. Blandings working. So both have been really fun looking back on it now. I made a great decision, which you never know until you have to look back on it. But thank God I don't look back and go, why did I leave LA?
Yeah. That's great. And it's interesting you mentioned the 1948 film Mr. Blandings Builds His Dream House. This movie starred Cary Grant, Melvin Douglas, who is your grandfather, and yes, Myrna Loy. Well, so I'm curious, what was it like for you to write about your grandfather?
It's always interesting for me because I knew him as, you know, I know him as my grandfather, right? So we all have an impression. Of course, he was lovable and I looked up to him very much and wanted to impress him and please him. He was such a movie star, his looks and his charm, and everybody loved him. And so I had that childhood idea of him. But as I write about him as a grown-up and the more I've gotten into movies, that's when I realized what an incredible actor he was, how similar our careers have been in many ways, because he had aspirations to write, he had aspirations to produce, and you know, he wasn't always the leading man. He transferred to character parts. He got recognized a little bit later in his career when he was in his late 60s, you know, for performances like Hud and then obviously being there. And I just think, particularly in Blandings, in Mr. Blandings Builds His Dream House, Of course, I love everyone in the film. Everybody is brilliant. But my grandfather does have the best lines in the movie.
I suppose you're wondering what all this has to do with Mr. Blandings and his dream house. Well, I'll tell you. Jim Blandings is part of the fabric of this town. Born and raised right here, he's as typical a New Yorker as anyone you'll ever meet. At least he was. If you want to know the real story, I guess I'm your boy. My name's Cole, Bill Cole. I'm Jim's lawyer and, quote, best friend, unquote.
He's the glue in Mr. Blandings. Without his wry observations, there's no comedy because it's him observing. He's the audience. And many times in my career, I'm the audience. I'm the person in the movie that goes, do you see what is going on here? And he's also the narrator of the film. So going back to what you said before, I've never really decided anything, but I do discover things as I'm writing. And as I write, I find more and more, oh, I'm writing about, you know, my own perceptions. Certainly the book isn't about me, but my perceptions and my own nostalgia for my grandfather, of course, leak into the, into the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Which movie made in Connecticut gives us the most flattering portrait of the Constitution State?
You know, that is, wow, that's a tough one. I might have to say the film, the 1947 film Boomerang, about a true case in Connecticut history. It's called Harold Israel versus the State of Connecticut. And this was in 1924. There was a murder of a priest in Bridgeport. And, you know, obviously this was a much beloved priest. Nobody could figure out who killed him. And there was a lot of pressure to solve the case. And they pinned it on a soldier and coerced a confession out of him. And then the prosecutor, Homer Cummings, was brought in. And they put a lot of pressure on this guy to, you know, put this guy away. And he stood up, he went and interviewed the guy. He did his own, you know, sort of investigation and surprised everybody when he stood up in court and said,
"There are so many baffling aspects to this case that I wish to reserve a plea until I've laid some of this evidence before the court."
"Very well.
Your Honor, such was the strange nature of this case that I and the gentlemen of my office made a detailed investigation into it. We felt that that would be necessary for any successful prosecution of the case."
And this case became a landmark case, you know, for prosecutors. This idea that it's just as important to protect the innocent. It is the moral fiber of what Connecticut at its best stands for.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I was very happy that you included the 1968 movie, The Swimmer, starring Burt Lancaster. As you say in your book, Burt jokingly referred to The Swimmer as Death of a Salesman in Swim Trunks. That's a great line. You describe The Swimmer as a great film that is filled with imperfections. How so?
It has two different directors. It starts out, it's Frank Perry directing. Burt Lancaster is frustrated. But, you know, he sees a cut of the movie, he's unhappy. He gets Barbara Loden fired. She was playing his mistress, and brings in Sidney Pollack. They reshoot two scenes, which kind of feel like a movie on its own. You know, they're terrific scenes, but they were shot in California. So the whole movie is like a dream. You know, you don't really know what is going on. And it's based on a John Cheever short story. He obviously, you know, it's writing about the social upper classes of Connecticut. And I think he nails it completely. It's very dark, but it's about, you know, something that you have to accept in a place like Connecticut. It's about, you know, these misplaced values, money, status, living in the right zip code, and what happens when you're stripped of all of that and how you're shunned. And Burt Lancaster was at a point in his career. He was 50 years old. He was going through a divorce. This was a very experimental time for him. I mean, I love Burt Lancaster just as an actor. But what I love about the film is it's not only a deconstruction of Connecticut, but it's a deconstruction of Burt Lancaster as a movie star.
You married?
What's that got to do with it?
You divorced? What?
You want to come with me?
Where?
Along a river of sapphire pools.
I never heard anyone talk like you.
Come with me. Be my love.
That I've heard before.
Not from me.
You're no different than any other guy.
Oh, but I am. I'm a very special human being. Noble and splendid.
It's a condemning of everything that Mr. Blandings was about. Get your house in suburbia. You know, Connecticut is the right place to live. And now this is the flip side. This is the consequence of people buying into the American dream. We drink too much. Our marriages get busted up. We're having affairs. One of my favorite lines in the movie is, you know, it's just such a great Connecticut line. I had to point it out. He's at one of the swimming pools, and the one whispers to the other, his wife had to have gray poop on. Regular mustard wasn't good enough for her. You know, now that is such a, like, we just know what that means, you know? And I remember, again, being class conscious Connecticut growing up. And if you were in someone's house and they had gray poop on, you know, it's like, you knew what that meant.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. You also write about the original 1975 version of The Stepford Wives, which was based on the novel by Ira Levin. Why did you decide to include this movie?
Oh, my God. I mean, again, The Stepford Wives, I had thought originally even about, you know, maybe even putting it on the cover. Mm. You have to consider this as a new genre of film, which is called Connecticut cinema. You know, he wrote it. He was living in Wilton. Years later, he said he wrote it about Wilton, Connecticut, and his feelings of being in Wilton, and that, you know, people wanted to, this need to conform that I think that, again, Connecticut has. But where it takes a left turn is the director, Brian Forbes, who was British. He put kind of a spin on it, and the screenwriter, William Golden, they put sort of a spin on it that I think cast an impression of Connecticut, that Connecticut is Stepford. And so I wanted to write a lot about that. Like, what did the movie get right? What did the movie get, you know, get wrong? But that ever since The Stepford Wives, you have an impression that if somebody is going, if a movie is placed in Connecticut, something very bad is going to happen. And that's what Stepford Wives succeeded in doing.
They change once they get there. I think the men make them change.
How would they do that?
I don't know. They... Oh, Jesus. It's so awful. If I'm wrong, I'm insane. And if I'm right, it's worse than if I'm wrong.
I wanted to re-examine it, you know, because people think, oh, it's just a horror movie. And it's like, the horror movie part of it is that they wrote this and they thought it was a satire. And what they actually wrote was a kind of a manifesto of bring your wife out of New York where she has friends, where she has a career as a photographer, and turn her into a robot, you know?
Yeah, very well said. And writer, as you write in your book, writer Linda Arkin said that it dumps on everyone, women, men, and suburbia. And Betty Friedan got emotional. She called the film a ripoff of the women's movement and stormed out of the screening room.
Yeah, this was the height of the women's movement. And they have this, you know, scene where Catherine Ross is saying to her friend, I'm no bra burner, you know, which was a derisive term. And The Stepford Wives is a movie that really should be looked at and re-examined because, again, one of the great screenwriters of our time, William Goldman, somebody who's always sort of lauded, he's the screenwriter. And he's putting these ideas out there and they're just, you know, completely sexist, and that under the guise that it's a horror movie. It's not really a horror movie in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Very well said. You starred in the 2011 film, The Green. It's set in Connecticut and it is pioneering in a few ways. Can you tell us a little bit about this film and share what it meant to you to work on it?
Well, yeah, I was so thrilled to be involved with this film. The producer, Paul Marcuselli, lived in Guilford and, you know, had the idea to write the film. He grew up in New Haven, and it was going to be the first, you know, gay film, which sounds sort of, you know, kind of hard to believe nowadays. But back then, it was going to be the first gay film made in Connecticut, gay storyline. And I was thrilled to be a part of it. I had always wanted to make a movie in Connecticut and have that experience.
I thought you would like it.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of way, don't you think?
No. What are you insinuating?
I don't know. Maybe just that our usual places were a little too public for tonight?
You are way out of line, because I have never been anything but completely supportive and accepting of you and Daniel.
Accepting? Accepting? What does that mean? Okay, well, I'm accepting of you and Philip, too. Thank you so much for deigning to accept me, Trish.
Well, now you're just twisting my words.
The Green is about coming home. It's about him coming to terms with moving back home. He's the main character is accused of molesting a student, and he has to defend himself. And the town kind of turns against him, which is a theme in a lot of Connecticut films. And by the end, they realize that, you know, that he's not guilty, and they come back and embrace him. And he has a sort of a sigh of relief. And Paul Marcuselli, who's the producer, you know, at the time, again, doing a film like that, where you're saying some negative things about Connecticut, he wasn't sure that they were going to embrace him. And they did. So yeah, it was a great film to be involved in. And again, one of the great things about the book is that people take a second look at The Green and some of these other Connecticut films.
Absolutely. And Paul Marcuselli, they'll recognize him as the guy from the Verizon commercials. Can you hear me now?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Ileana Douglas, thank you very much for joining us today. It was an honor to talk to you. Congratulations on Connecticut in the Movies, From Dream Houses to Dark Suburbia. It's a wonderful book.
Thank you.
Ileana Douglas is an actress and the author of Connecticut in the Movies, From Dream Houses to Dark Suburbia. Find out more about Ileana and Connecticut films at wpr.org/beta.
We wanted to set ourselves apart from pop music, but yet at the same time, kind of move into that territory. We wanted to occupy that territory.
Coming up, Mark Mothersbaugh, co-founder of the new wave band Devo, talks about de-evolution. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.